21.
Okay, so we'll start with the roll call. Michael Aaron?
Here.
Howard Chung?
Here.
Bridget Davila, she's going to be late. She says she'll be here by 7. Christine Williams?
Here.
Rebecca Lee is not coming tonight. Robert Mulbauer?
Here.
John Winston?
Here.
And Lisa Spinall. Great. So hello, everybody. Last meeting of the year. Hello to everybody. Thanks for your consistent and familiar faces in the audience. The first thing we want to do is we want to approve the minutes.
Can you speak into the mic?
Sure. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to go to the minutes. Does anybody have any edits or changes to the minutes? Anybody in the audience? Any public comment? Carrie?
Harry Brunstein, I just didn't get to it until tonight. I see on top of page...
Pardon me, sir, I didn't... What is your name?
Harry Brunstein. On top of page 3, it said, one thing I did not, I believe it's one thing I did note, which is quite a bit of difference. I just want to endorse Reed Evans' opinion that revised principle and parameters, that there's no explanation why those things were not changed in response to neighbors' requests. I think that's outstanding and needs to be addressed.
There's an edit to it. That it should be note instead of not in under Roman numeral 1. Okay.
No.
Okay. Anything else? Want to take a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Thanks,
second.
Mike. Second by Howard. All in
yes.
favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So. Just to remind everybody, and welcome to some new faces as well tonight. On the bottom of page 2. You see the CAC ground rules, and this is just to remind everyone, this is the way that we maintain our collective community together. They're up on the wall. We want to make sure that we hear one person at a time. We want to make sure that when people are up, we don't clap for individual comments, because we want to make sure it's fair for everybody. And our intention is to create to have good decorum. So that's just a reminder about that. And then the context for tonight's meeting specifically is that this is a time for us to, we were talking before we got started, that the last meeting was a hard meeting in that space. There was a lot that we made that really hard. And aren't you so glad to be back here?
Yes.
It's light, we can hear and I can see everybody. It's not like you're at the movie theater or at a command performance of a assembly for high school, which maybe... Mike, you might want to share some stories at some point of the old days.
No stories.
So what we wanted to do with this meeting is we wanted to address the open questions, because there were a lot of questions that were raised about different aspects of things that people have raised, that things that we didn't address. So we're going to use this meeting to address those issues, as well as to respond to the plus delta feedback, to talk about how we want to think about, as we move into phase 2, things that we want to do differently to continue to engage the community, as well as make sure that the meetings are as effective as possible. So that's a little bit about the context for tonight. There's no new business tonight. It's more of connecting to the last meeting and getting answers and providing feedback to you accordingly. This meeting was supposed to be the Board of Supervisors letter, the update for the progress. You guys didn't see it. That's on me, because I was not capable. I shared with Mike Affleck earlier. There was a lot of edits to the document, and I was working through it very thoughtfully. And what I realized was I was rushing to try to get it done, and it didn't seem fair to the process, because if this is our one report for the year, I want to make sure it's ample. I want to make sure it tells the story. Several people provided really good feedback to it, so it's not a matter of the feedback not being good. It's more of being able to be clear about the next steps. I wanted to make sure that we could include the feedback from how this group wants to move forward. I wanted to include part of our conversation from tonight in the agenda, in the report as well. So my goal is that the document, because I heard it loud and clear from everybody, that this wasn't just a cursory, we're just going to give an update. I'm taking it seriously that when somebody comes into the, if somebody comes to the next meeting and they say, well, what happened last year, that you'd actually be able to take this document and look at it, and it would do a really good job of providing the context of what happened through the course of all the meetings. And as a part of that, also knowing that it can't be 5 pages long, because no supervisor is going to read a 5-page long memo. So the ability to be terse and get it takes a lot longer than just if I were just to add it all and just have it be, you know, a giant mail merge of edits. So we'll have it for the next meeting, and it'll get posted with plenty of time for people to be able to take a look at it. And my apologies for, as a volunteer, that I have a limited amount of time. Yeah.
Well, at the reduce your salary.
What was that?
He might have to reduce my salary.
Is it your current intention to let us all see? I think you mentioned.
Oh, yeah. Pass the mic.
Is it 1, 2?
Hold it down for a second.
Yeah. You might have got it.
Is it your current intention to attempt to do what you suggested last time, and that is at least let us all see all the comments from all of us, and of course if there's any public comments, see them.
Yeah.
I know we've already had at least one member of the public send us a very detailed a document that he said should be the minority report. I, for one, feel, as I think you just mentioned, that we should try to keep this memo short and maybe even work on shortening it, because I will say I gave you a document and I redlined it from the prior draft, and I try to make it as as few comments as possible, but maintain what I felt should be in there. So, but we'll be able to see everybody's comments.
Yeah.
And then I have another question relating to that document. We can't, first, are we subject to the Brown Act? I'm now more educated than I was last time. So we are a local legislative body, a public body, or an official body, or one of those many things that comes within.
It's an advisory body, but it's you're legislated. Sorry.
Okay.
I don't.
With that, then, it's very, I guess what we can do, we have to meet in full session, is take this document and read it. Might we get it in advance?
Yes.
That solves all my problems. Then,
so my intention is a couple of things, and I actually can even show it to you because it's about this thick. Because Robert's comments are from a meeting that we sat down and we went through it, so they're chicken scratch old style, they're not redlined, and you know, they're not the track changes in the Word document. So so we're going to add a section on the minority point, talking about the points of contention where we don't have agreement, so it's really clear. Your comments as well as, I can pull it out. But the idea is to make it so that it reads like a document, so that it's not just how many times we met, but as we met, these are the things that we covered. Here's where there was agreement, here's where there was disagreement, that it wasn't, that we didn't have consensus. Again, to be really clear about exactly.
Good.
Yeah.
You've answered my question. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Okay. So let's go to part one of responses to the public feedback. So one thing that you'll see that we're in the process of changing how we're interacting as a team. And so as you'll see tonight, that we've got the city staff actually sitting at the table with us so that we can have much more of a conversation instead of it being kind of asked and answered, which has been how we've done it in the past. And we want to move towards greater kind of cohesive interaction. So let us begin.
Okay.
Jeremy, I turned it off.
Okay. Thank you. Emily Lawrence with the Office of Economic and Workforce Development. So we're going to...
With the Office of what?
Sorry, the Office of Economic and Workforce Development. So we're going to split this up. I'm going to cover some of the questions. Jeremy is going to cover some of the questions that are Warren Planning's wheelhouse, and then Lisa will pass the mic over and she'll respond to the suggestions for how to improve the CAC's process going forward. And you'll see it's what we have up here is a pretty dense matrix, and we did that so that when you all reference it afterwards, things are really written out, but we're gonna try to go through it, you know, fairly quickly, and then this will be a record that's available to read it in greater detail.
And I think just as context, that the intention is that as we end this first phase of the work, we want to make sure that the questions that are unanswered, the things that are of concern, we're trying to address everything so that we can move forward with answers to the open items, some of which were open and some of which were talked about a long time ago. But if it was something that was mentioned in the second meeting and you didn't start coming until the fifth or the sixth meeting, you may not have known the answer to. So our intention is to get everybody on the same page, knowledge-wise.
Great, okay. So the first question is, because the CAC is an advisory body, not a decision-making body, how is it possible for there to be a CAC representative on the evaluation panel for selecting a developer? And so we wanted to clarify that the evaluation panel is actually not a decision-making body either. It's advisory to, first it's advisory to the SFPUC general manager for evaluating the RFQ process and who proceeds to the proposal process, the RFP process. And then with the second step, the panel is advisory to the SFPUC commission. The second question, I think we had a few questions around this, and we consolidated it to this kind of macro question of whether new housing really is needed. So this is something that we've presented on before, back when we were doing, kind of starting early and doing a context presentation at the beginning of every meeting, which is something that we'll talk about again later. The kind of the data about the affordability crisis, Prop K, which was the voter ballot measure that called for 30,000 new housing units that was approved by 70% of voters, kind of what's been happening in terms of housing production relative to population growth. That's something that we've covered, and we will continue to give updates on that. It's not something that we provide a lot of data on recently, so that is something that we like to continue to address and provide information on. But I also want to say that the kind of the general question about whether affordable housing is needed, while it's a perfectly fair one, in terms of the legislation that created the CAC, which the Board of Supervisors passed, which is kind of what directs staff in, and the CAC in our scope, it was pretty clear that providing affordable housing as a primary purpose of the project was kind of how they saw the CAC and staff's purpose here. And so kind of the question of whether that is a good motive is kind of outside of what we're empowered to address, although we do want to continue providing information. There was a related question wondering how much unoccupied housing there is in San Francisco, what the vacancy rate is. We provided some information on this in the past. I was able to find some new census data that I think is more recent and more specific to San Francisco than last time we presented, and it showed a 3% vacancy rate for apartments and a 0.9% vacancy rate for home ownership. And those rates are lower than Bay Area wide and lower than nationally as well. We had a question about whether the 50% affordability level in the parameters for the project is adequate. Okay.
What's the meaning of
that? Oh, yeah, this is better. Whether that's adequate to qualify the project as a public purpose. And so first we wanted to say that the affordable housing is one of many public purposes for the project. And I think generally there seems to be consensus that that is a public purpose and it is a public good. But we also want to talk about how the market rate housing component provides public purpose also. So the first way that it does that is it allows the project to generate enough revenue for SFPUC to get some revenue for putting their land into the project. And that gets passed on to everyone who is a ratepayer, who gets water service and possibly power service and all the other services from the PUC in San Francisco. So it does translate into when SFPUC sets their rates, how much money is available to kind of fill the gaps and keep rates low. The second thing that providing market rate housing alongside the affordable housing does is it provides revenues to subsidize the affordable housing. So as some of you might recall, we had staff from the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development here, gosh, probably 6+ months ago at this point. And one of the things that they walked us through was comparing a project at Balboa Reservoir that had 100% affordable housing versus one that had 50% affordable housing. And what they showed was that in the 100% affordable scenario, without the extra revenues coming from the market rate, it would cost them $200 to $250 million to subsidize all of that affordable housing. And that would be money that would come away, be taken away from other potential housing projects. Whereas with the market rate component included, that money could stay where it was and provide that housing. And then the revenues generated as part of the project could subsidize this housing. We also wanted to say that the market rate housing has a purpose too, and the housing shortage that we're facing impacts people at all income levels. And so kind of the impacts on housing supply, even at market rate, is something to think about. In terms of the legal aspects of a public purpose, we did want to make it clear that we work closely with the city attorney's office, and they are advising us on legal requirements and whether they're satisfied as we go along, and they have been throughout the process. So the next question was whether the evaluation panel for the RFP and the RFQ could be reconsidered in terms of who is sitting on that and whether adding a Westwood Park resident or representative to the panel made sense. So we wanted to reiterate that the reason for having a CAC member on the panel isn't to represent a specific constituency, it's really to represent the principles and parameters and the process and all of the opinions that went into developing those, which is why we think the chair makes the most sense for that role. I think, you know, we feel very confident that the chair has the ability to represent all of those constituencies and the process fairly. And so, you know, it is up to the city to decide who's on the evaluation panel, but we really did appreciate hearing from the CAC in your advisory capacity at the last meeting. And I think what we heard were all of different viewpoints from the CAC members about how to proceed with this. And based on that, we felt like the most rational path forward was to keep things as we designed them. We have the question again of how large the development is going to be. And, you know, we've gotten the ball rolling on the parameters and what people hope to see at the site so early that we really don't know yet. We now have the parameters done, and those are an input for prospective developers to plug in and figure out what can fit within the physical constraints of the site. We expect that when the finalists come back with their proposals for the RFP part of the process, they will have preliminary numbers or ranges of numbers, and that's where we'll really start to see the hard numbers come out. We do, for people who are new, we do want to stress, though, that in the development parameters, which are already established, there are constraints on size, so how much of the land can be dedicated to buildings, and how physically large those buildings can be. It's really the question of how many units fit inside those envelopes that has left to be answered. We had a question about how the project's impacts, I think what this was getting at is how the local impacts on the citywide interests are balanced. And so we wanted to pull out a quote from the legislation that created the from the Board of Supervisors that created the CAC. And they defined the project as an opportunity for the city to realize a substantial amount of new affordable housing, which I think is both a local benefit and a citywide benefit, as well as other community benefits, which are more localized, while still allowing the Public Utilities Commission to receive fair market value for the land. And so as I explained on the previous slide, that really has a citywide impact on utility rates. In terms of, you know, I think the gist of this might have been how the citywide interests continue to be considered along with kind of all of the local feedback. And so we did want to remind people that to actually move forward and become anything, this project is going to have to go through our various regulatory commissions at the city level. We had a question about kind of the language in the RFQ for developer selection that went out, wondering why the SFPUC's land use framework wasn't explicitly called out.
I'm wondering why what?
Why the SFPUC's land use framework, which is an internal policy of theirs, why that wasn't explicitly cited in the RFQ. And it's not that it doesn't apply, it's that it's just not necessary or feasible to include all of the regulations that will apply to this project in the RFQ. It's frankly up to the developers to do their homework, and it's up to us to kind of point things out when they miss them as we go along. And wanted to make sure everyone knew that SFPUC management and their attorneys were involved in drafting the RFQ, and they felt very confident that everything in there is consistent with SFPUC policies and practices. We had questions about what to expect going forward of the CAC process. So in the near term, while kind of the developer selection pieces are underway, we are hoping that the CAC will keep meeting, but it is an opportunity to give everyone a little bit of a breather, but we'd like to try to keep momentum up nonetheless. So what we'd like to do is come back in February when the transportation demand management study should hopefully be complete and really get into that.
Draft.
Sorry, the draft TDM study will be complete, so to start sharing that. And then kind of keeping on an every other month schedule, I think April would be a good time for another meeting, and we can be in dialogue about what would make the most sense to cover then. Looking at the schedule for the RFP and the RFQ, the public meeting where those proposals are presented and we solicit feedback, June is probably a realistic time for that. We haven't pinned down the schedule, but just kind of counting forward for where we are now. And then once the developer has been selected, the CAC continues. It becomes the forum to provide input to the developer as the project moves forward over several years. And in terms of the scheduling and the frequency of meetings, we'll have to figure that out. I think with these long processes, there are really intense times where there's a lot to consider, and then there are kind of times where they're designing at their desks and maybe a little while before they can come back to us.
So just to pause on that, just my battery, sorry. Just to, especially from our constituents that are City College related, that the intention is, and just to being able to call it out now, that we think that the charrette or the event where people are going to get to provide, where the developers will be able to present their ideas is going to happen in June. That could be when school, you know, there's been some budget in the past around doing things, so we did it the summer so City College couldn't be involved.
And I just want to make it really clear and on the record that based upon how long it's going to take to get the proposals in and the review process, that our best guess now is that it's going to be in June. And we want to say that now so that we make sure that we've got good outreach to make sure that the City College community will be able to be effectively engaged in that process. And that has nothing to do with school being out. It has to do with how long each the next stage is going to take.
Great. Well, it was a great break because I'm going to pass it over to Jeremy to start talking about some of the transportation questions.
Hello. I'm Jeremy Shaw with the Planning Department. And at the risk of being a little redundant tonight, I'm going to walk through a few TDM questions and then go into the TDM presentation overall. A brief one. But you'll hear some of the same points a couple times. But so the first question was why was transportation data collected when school was out of session? It actually was collected multiple times while school was in session. So we made sure that City College normal class schedules were in operation for the TDM study data collection, which happened September of this year and May of this year, as well as for a background study that was done a couple years ago in November and February. And there's no shortage of data. There have been so many projects in the Balboa area, and each one of them has done data collection. So that is not a challenge, and we have a lot of data. And just so we know, any future environmental review of the Balboa Reservoir site will again be required to collect or ensure that its data is updated and adequate. So I hope that addresses that question. There were, I think, you know, I hope that the presentation tonight can illuminate a lot of these questions because I think TDM is pretty fuzzy. It's a really wonky term, transportation demand management. So I'm hoping to clarify some of these things. So one of the questions was, how does TDM address traffic circulation? Well, the traditional definition of transportation demand management is much more narrowly defined and typically doesn't talk about circulation. That can be a huge study, which is well beyond the budget of this plan. But at the same time, will be circulation and its impacts of the reservoir will be looked at in the environmental review. I mean, that's something that just happens by virtue of any development project. That being said, the supervisor who secured the funding for the study was very concerned about circulation and wanted to make sure it was addressed. So we asked the consultants on the TDM plan to identify circulation needs or traffic circulation needs that could warrant further study and hopefully could be addressed in the short term independently or in advance of a TDM plan or something at the reservoir. Another question was, will there be a parking study that looks at surrounding neighborhoods? And I'll show you a picture in a minute, but this TDM plan did do data collection and is analyzing parking in the surrounding neighborhoods as well as making a list of short-term and long-term recommendations to specifically address parking management in the surrounding neighborhoods.
Pardon?
Yes.
The materials we have here.
Yeah.
Are they?
They're coming up.
I don't see this, or do I?
Slide 9
where?
Or 10 or something. Is it?
How does the TDM? How could
I might have switched the order of one, right?
Yeah, I think.
But
it's
in there. It's the blue.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's hard to see the colors on there. Okay, so how could the RFQ be released before the TDM study was completed? So and similarly, the next question, how does the TDM study relate to the reservoir nearby neighborhoods and City College? So the idea of the Balboa area TDM plan was to get a head start, because when we started the reservoir public workshops and then the CAC, we heard a lot of public input and a lot of concerns and questions around parking and circulation, and so we wanted to address that early, and that's what prompted the Balboa area TDM plan. Typically, transportation demand management is something that comes after or at the end of a development proposal or for an established campus or an established employment center. You may recall when the consultants came, they talked a lot about Mountain View. Those are cases when transportation demand management strategies came after there was a development or some kind of existing land use. In this case, we don't have a development yet. We don't have a land use, and City College is still working on their master plan, and that will also include transportation demand management strategies. The purpose of this plan that we're talking about tonight and in February is to get a head start and to coordinate all the different aspects that touch on TDM before each entity, whether it's the reservoir or City College or parking management and neighbor, before they go off in their own corners and start proposing things that might impact the other two. We wanted to make sure that the three entities or sub-areas were looked at cohesively, and so we can evaluate the impacts of one on the other all at the same time, so that at the point when the reservoir developer and the city are ready to propose a TDM plan, or when City College is ready to propose their TDM strategies, there's already a blueprint in place. And we've already started that conversation, and the measures that are on the table are coordinated between the three entities. So that is the purpose of this plan, and I'll talk about it a little bit more in a second, put some more kind of flesh on those ideas so you'll understand what it'll actually look like. So this is it's really hard to see this, I'm sorry, but it's okay, they're just pictures for illustrative purposes. The point I wanted to make, and hopefully some of these points address these questions in more detail, is that transportation demand management is one piece of transportation planning. So as I said a minute ago, circulation isn't really part of TDM. There are a whole host of regional and local factors that affect how we get to work or play every day. And some of these regional factors are beyond the scope of the reservoir, frankly. And there's something we have to figure out how to manage, or they're addressed at the MTC, the Metropolitan Transportation Council level, or they're addressed
what council?
At MTC, the Metropolitan Transportation Council. It's just the regional body. The point is that the reservoir, we can't address every transportation issue with the reservoir, but we hope that the TDM piece can make an impact within the realm that we have some power, we have some decision making over. And so, but we do need to keep in mind that a lot of the things that people are concerned about are on their minds we can't get to in the CAC, or we can't address through the reservoir. Many of those plans or projects are addressed at the other CAC, the Balboa Park area that Robert sits on. And I presented this plan, and we'll be back and invite anybody here to attend those CACs, which are much more transportation-focused at those CAC meetings. So there's a whole range of issues, is my point. TDM is one piece.
Would you repeat that last statement about the other?
The other CAC? The Balboa Park CAC, which also typically meets here on the fourth Tuesdays of the month. It's different this month for the holidays.
Tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow. Same time, more or less, same place.
Same place.
Yeah. That one focuses on transportation issues a lot more than us tonight and in general. So what is transportation demand management? It's basically describes any set or group of policies, programs, and incentives that can be deployed in order to create more options for people who would prefer to exercise different transportation options from driving or driving alone. And so the guiding principle is to provide more choice. And in providing more choice, the purpose is to ease some of the pressure on our transportation resources, on our roadways, which are limited. They're geographically constrained. There's some things we just can't build our ways out of. And so TDM can describe any set of strategies or policies that help make it easier to use those resources and provide choices for people to have alternatives. Some examples are on the board. Land use planning is typically referred to as the best transportation policy, because if you can put people close to where they're going, then they don't need to travel those far distances or drive a long way or take that hard commute. But there's only so much we can do with land use planning with a build-out city. So we have all these other measures, whether they're programs or incentives, to help people use those other alternative transportation modes. Subsidized transit passes, in particular for students, has come up a lot in this conversation, is something we're still going to pursue, how to implement that kind of thing. with City College in partnership. The quote, last mile shuttle service has also been cited. It's something I've asked the consultants to look at in the case of City College, because there is a big barrier to using transit. It's that hill, you know, and that, those sidewalks on Ocean Avenue. Bike share, parking management, different ways of managing fees and subscriptions and parking. There's a whole range of measures, and that's kind of the generic way to describe TDM. And like I was saying a minute ago, that's normally done after there's a land use component. But in the case with this plan, we wanted to strategize a little bit better and be more proactive. And so just to give you a sense that we are still very much at the beginning of this conversation, and to address the question of why we didn't have to finish this plan before the RFQ, these conversations will continue for a while. So it's the Transportation Demand Management Study, Transportation in General, started with the principles and parameters over the last year and a half with the CAC. These questions will continue in the community design workshops that we will do as part of the reservoir process once the developer is on board. They will evolve as the developer proposes a development project, and they will be formally part of any environmental review that's required, environmental review to measure and mitigate any impacts, especially transportation impacts. And then codified, sorry it's hard to read, but codified in either a TDM plan or both the TDM plan and a mitigation and monitoring report. It's a lot of words, but basically it's all formalized and it will go on for a while. At the same time, City College is working on its own campus facilities master plan. They will talk about how to implement that next spring. And there are a number of ongoing operations committees and capital planning committees where transportation demand management can be addressed and will continue to be addressed over the long term. And finally, as someone was asking, there are neighborhood issues, particularly parking by Ocean Avenue, ped bike connections, pedestrian safety, the station area. There are so many things that touch on TDM in this area that we really have to take a step back and figure out how they all fit together. And that's the point of the TDM plan, is to tie these three kind of areas of planning that touch on TDM together in a coordinated way. This is the map for which the consultant needs to, this is the project area for the consultant. You can see City College in blue, the reservoir site in green, and the neighborhoods where they have analyzed parking in yellow. So the TDM plan, what will it look like? It will be a list of short and long-term measures, TDM measures, for each of those three areas. It will also include ways that those three areas can be better coordinated, so that one, you know, the right hand knows what the left hand is doing. We can make sure that the policies complement each other, because we have a lot of shared resources between the three. It will also include guidance, recommendations for monitoring and ongoing implementation. The plan might be a plan can be formalized, but they are always evolving because transportation, the context changes, and sometimes we need to update our policies and plans. And then finally, the plan will include what I mentioned before, identification of short-term circulation needs that warrant further study and hopefully can be addressed independently. Sorry, I'm repeating myself, but again, so when it's now, we're doing the plan now, and again, the hope is to inform all those formal processes that will come later. The schedule, the data collected was finished in September. They produced a report in October, which is online, and happy to talk about what's in the report. We'll see how long the agenda item is in February, but we can talk about it then. I'm trying to get to the other Balboa Park CAC as well on the agenda there next year. The hope is by January, February, we have these draft lists out for review and discussion. February, March, we can refine them. Of course, in an ongoing way, we will be coordinating any measures and making sure that they fit with City College's facilities master plan. That's it.
So I'm wondering if we want to pause and do this, and then, because this is a lot of data.
Yeah.
And then let's go to the recommendations for future meetings next. So so let me turn to my fellow colleagues. any questions or feedback based upon what both Emily and Jeremy presented? Oh, hold on.
Oh.
It turns itself on.
Oh, there we go.
I think I'm starting to understand the TDM, thanks to the four of you actually first meeting with me before I even was on the board, and then your explanations tonight. TDM is not a parking solution. It's an alternative solution to transportation. So I just have a very simple question, and that is, in this whole process, in this whole process, who is going to address the City College alternative parking problem? I know TDM, you've explained to me, is an attempt to, in some manner, reduce the need for parking, but we all know that need will not evaporate. So as I understand it, it's during the RFQ process. It starts then. But I'll let you explain.
Okay, there are a couple things I wanted to make sure I respond to. One is that TDM, again, it's generically, it's any strategy that affects the choices we make, and part of those choices, part of that is parking. So parking management, how we design it, how we price it, how people access it, who can access it, that is all part of TDM. So the first thing you said is it doesn't quite cover, and that was my error in not explicitly talking
exactly
about parking, but it is included in TDM.
But I have read in various places that one, City College has to address it in their master study. Two, the developer has to address this. The developer has to address this as well as other problems. And so, as well as other problems. One, two. And so the matter will be addressed, as I understand it, in the RFQ, as soon as in the RFQ process, as well as the RFQ process. Is that where it's going to be addressed? This is bad. Yeah, thank you for that. This is much better. That was a bad microphone.
Yeah, so the I think it would happen more in the RFP process when developers are really focusing on proposals and then continue to be discussed and iterated and kind of zooming in on the details from there on out.
Okay. So you expect the developers to try to solve the city or address the City College parking problem?
Yeah, I think that the developers are going to have to do a lot of thinking and a lot of coordinating with City College and the city to make this work.
Going forward with the CAC process, you've given the staff recommendation, and we haven't addressed it yet, that there only be a chair that serves on the evaluation committee. Is that correct?
Yes.
That chair is not able to talk to me or any other people except in session. Is that correct? In other words, under the Brown Act, we can't have side meetings or seriatim meetings, as I now understand it.
You can't have a quorum of CAC members get together outside of a scheduled meeting.
I also now understand that there is a problem with seriatim meetings.
Yep.
Is that correct? So two people can meet and talk?
Yep.
And then later, if two more people meet and talk, that might be a quorum causing a problem for all of us?
Yeah, I mean, you would have to be careful. I'm not sure where this is
going. I'll tell you exactly where this is going. I do not see.
Can I respond?
Okay.
So it's not the existence of the conversations. It's a series of conversations that involve more than a quorum of the body that are intended to generate a consensus among that group. So the chair can have a number of one-off conversations to describe what she's seeing or what she's hearing. But if she's not then trying to generate consensus among a quorum of the group, those conversations would not violate the bond of Brown.
Well, I will, and I don't know if this is the proper time, because maybe it's later in the meeting, but I would repeat what I said last week, and I know Lisa said that this is the staff's recommendation, and we're still going to discuss later whether or not Westwood Park can have, oh, no, we're not going to discuss that.
No,
No, in our conversations with Supervisor Yee and with the planning team, we had a meeting with the supervisor, I guess about a week ago, and went through and kind of talked about where we were with the CAC and where things were, and also discussed your recommendation moving forward. And the intention is that between having the chair and I was at the last meeting, I said I wanted to take it under advisement to really understand if it was going to be a situation where I was going to need a secondary perspective. And we went back and we discussed it, and we came to an agreement that it was best to have it be the chair and to have Linda Da Silva as the City College representative to be the two voices that are, and my job is to represent the collective parameters of the parameters and principles that we've come, that we've agreed upon.
So that was an agreement between you and the city?
Actually, it wasn't an agreement between me. It was I said I would come back. I wanted to find out exactly, so let me break it down.
But you said that was an agreement.
Yeah, well, an agreement. It was, I brought it back to them, and basically, and do you want to be really clear?
I'd like to reframe this.
Yeah.
It's not a recommendation. The city is forming this election panel.
Yeah.
And in our discussion with the CAC, we've talked about how the CAC will be represented. There is not a vote for the CAC to endorse that recommendation. This is how we're setting up the panel.
Michael, I recognize that, but I am trying to find a way that we can be kept apprised of the RFQ and the RFP process so that the CAC can have true input and not have it be a fiat accompli that here's the RFQ process completed. So we talked about meetings of the CAC. We talked about apprising us of what's going on. I want the CAC to have a true stake and a true voice in this process, not just a nominal voice. The CAC, not the chair.
Has been over a year to draft the meat of the RFQ. Sorry?
Can you start over again, please?
Sure. The CAC has worked over a year to draft the meat of the RFQ and the principles for parameters. Everything that comes through that process is based on the input of the CAC and the public. The CAC, under the legislation passed by the Board of Supervisors, is not to take direct participation in the selection of a developer partner. We've created a process that is, frankly, in my view, unprecedented in terms of having visibility into the RFP process and the specific proposals so that everyone in the public can comment on those proposals. So I do not agree at all with the notion that there is only a nominal participation by the CAC or the public in this process. We view that as critical to getting to a developer that knows what is needed here. And therefore, we feel like the preservation of the chair and her ability to inform the CAC without trying to generate consensus from the CAC is the way to do that in the way that we've set it up.
Can you repeat that? Because you might have hit a good topic or a good solution or a possible solution. What would the chair do? Would she come back and talk to us about, here are the problems we're seeing, here's the resolution that I think is best for us? In other words, would we have a say in the RFQ process? Or at least, will she report to us? Will she ask our consensus?
I think she's willing to inform you. I don't know that she's willing to seek your consensus on her input into the RFQ process and her role as a member of the RFQ committee. The idea would be that she would represent the CAC with her knowledge of the history of getting to here and the issues that have been brought up at these meetings and give her input accordingly, and certainly can inform you on where she got to and how she got there. That is how I think we envisioned the CAC's participation through this mechanism.
Well, I'll listen further as we go forward, because my main comment is I think the entire CAC should be informed of the progress and at least be able to give their opinions on that. Is that the intention going forward?
So here is how I want to take it from DEFCON 8 down to DEFCON 1. And what I want to say is that the question when you raised this last time, Mike, which is a very valid question to raise, I wanted to go back and say, what is really going to be my responsibility in this role? And can I do this role as one versus two? And so through the process of really clarifying what's going to happen between the two stages,
are very different things. So for the first stage, for the RFQ, and being one of the two civilians, non-government folks that'll be selecting or narrowing the list of developers from however many we get to 2 to 3, my job is to make sure, is this a developer? So first off, we have the parameters of what we're looking for in terms of the criteria, right? And some of those are about their financial ability, precedent of projects that they've done before. I feel very comfortable being able to evaluate against that criteria. The other piece, which is really important, is to be able to understand, do the developers that are applying, will they have the ability to work effectively with community? Have they worked well with communities in the past? Are they good at getting community feedback? Do they have experience doing open space projects within? So my job is really to make sure that with the parameters and principles that we have created collectively, to make sure that the developer is one that has the ability to be able to deliver upon those parameters and principles. And I feel very confident being able to do that. So I'm not, so then for the second stage, which is the actual selection of the final selection for the developer, that's going to be a very different process, because that's going to be a process, which we're going to talk about for the April meeting, is about, excuse me, how are we going to get as much community input as possible so that the developers will each come and make a presentation of what their ideas are, and then we're going to collectively hear feedback from everybody's going to get a chance to weigh in and give their feedback on the various options. And then that feedback will be used to figure out which will be the best developer to select. I feel comfortable being able to do that because my job will be to really listen and to hear everybody's feedback and make sure that I'm going to represent what the community has collectively said. And it might even be that after we hear from the community collectively, that we as a CAC then have to distill what we've heard from the larger community to then feed into, well, Lisa, as you're looking at it, these are the top 5 things that we think matter. So my job is to really to be a filter that's collecting the key nuggets of what we're hearing and the way that to have it bubble up. So that's the, so I feel very comfortable being able to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Other questions from, yeah, Robert.
Earlier in the agenda, we talked about a report to the Board of Supervisors, and I've been serving on this committee now for a year, and here it's saying that we're advisory to the PUC. So this report that's going to the board really should be going to the PUC, since we're the primacy of our advisory is to the PUC, secondarily to the Board of Supervisors. Is that correct? Yeah.
So the Board of Supervisors in the legislation that they created to form the CAC, they put in this provision that as the creator, they want to see an annual report. I think it would be a terrific idea to also send it to the PUC as well.
Okay, great. Then we're looking at the transportation data that was collected to date. It was collected in May of 2016, and I think that's at the lowest trough of enrollment here at CCSM. And CCSA, sorry. Is this working better?
Yes.
So, you know, as we move through time, tuition's going to continue to go up. I happen to know a lot of students, the millennials that are going to school and they're taking classes here, they're trying to backfill classes here for state, and they're going back and forth. I can't see any scenario where enrollment is going to go anywhere but up here. And when I hear about a 35% reduction in enrollment now, I'm just thinking that those numbers that were collected in May of 2016 are going to be maybe 35% below where we're going to be at in 5 years. So my question is there any way to accommodate now, today, anticipated demand? Maybe it won't be up to a full 35%. I would expect it will be at some point. But what can we do to reconcile low enrollment figures today to where we expect we will be? And then I'll have one more comment after you respond.
Sure. Well, I think the consultants are very well aware that of City College enrollment, and that supporting the enrollment goals of City College is part and parcel of the TDM plan and of the reservoir. I mean, it's written in multiple places. So the guiding principles are there. The data, I think you bring up really the most interesting and sort of the point of the whole thing is, can we accommodate future demand? And the premise, and I apologize for it's technical and but so it just takes a lot of words to explain. But transportation demand, it's fungible. It changes. It can be. It's like supply and demand of any economy. It depends on the rules that you set in place. And so, actually, if you're talking about future demand growing, this is the perfect time to talk about TDM so that we can manage it better before it's already here and we're in a whole heap of trouble even beyond today. So the numbers, and the advantage of the TDM plan is because there are so many other factors going in and the more formal ways of implementing and enacting a TDM strategy through City College Master Plan or through the EIR or through environmental review or whatever it may be, this plan now, it's not going to get into the level of precision and detail that would obligate or limit future options. It's really talking about types of recommendations, guiding principles, and the direction each of these three areas should go in. And then when we have better numbers, or at the appropriate time when we're ready to codify something, then we can make sure the strategies work. Sorry, it's hard to say, it's hard to put a finer point on it, I guess, because we don't know what the numbers are, but the answer is yes, we will figure out how to accommodate future demand, in short.
And that segues into my last comment, not a question. So much hinges on this TDM, on this project here, and it's very theoretical discussing it here, and rightfully so. I mean, it's state of the art, and we're trying to, you know, look at computer models of where it's going to be and come up with strategies that kind of meet the holes in the development proposal. But one of the reasons I wanted to be on this committee is I think we all need to be real familiar with the TDM strategy that comes at the tail end. And towards that end, as we get into the nuts and bolts of what we're doing to plug holes so that we can have, you know, lower demands on transportation and circulation, I think the community needs to really have a baseline understanding of how that works. You know, well, here's the hole, here's the proposed fix. Here's a hole, here's a proposed fix. We got to get it from the theoretical to really kind of nuts and bolts so that those of us in this room can feel that, okay, there's been a real good effort and I understand it. I want to understand it. And I suggested before, maybe we can use some of these upcoming meetings where we have some time while we're waiting for the proposal to come in to show some real nuts and bolts examples of how this works elsewhere in the city. I think it'd be time well spent. And then last, with regard to the TDM, I'm glad that you're going to be meeting with the other committee, same plan.
That's for the other committee, too.
Yeah, and but it has impacts because one of the strategies may be, and I don't want to use this too much, but, you know, if one of the strategies is to create a shuttle, well, doggone it, you know, our friends at SFMTA need to know that there's an expectation that, you know, something's going to go in at the other end down at the station. So we've got to make sure that these two committees are really connected and we understand what's being recommended out of here is translated to the other committees so they can be looking at the demands in the Balboa Park Station and go, oh, you know what, maybe we need another loading ramp for something out here. So it's just, you know, we have a lot of work to do yet, and it's just very important that the fundamentals of this is understood by the community.
Robert, do you think it would make sense for us to explore the two committees coming together at, you know, more formally? Like, I'm just wondering from a process perspective, does it make sense, or, you know, you're toggling back and forth between the two, the staff toggles back and forth. I wonder if at any point, or where we should think about having, are there points where we should have a shared meeting, you know, maybe it's with the TDM presentation of the data, or, I mean, sometimes I think it makes sense for everybody to hear the same presentation at the same time. So that everyone has the same understanding, because otherwise it's, you know, it's a little bit of a well, I heard this, I heard that, right? So I just something for future consideration as we think about upcoming meetings. Other feedback or questions to the presentation? Yeah. Okay, John. We're down to one mic.
Just in addition to having the two CACs meet, it would be really great to have some representatives from City College, especially the master plan people, if they could show up for some, so we could coordinate with them, because there are big projects going on at City College, and we don't know all of them. They don't know, and the TDM plugs into a lot of that, and I'm not sure how on the same page we all are. And it would be nice to at least have a somebody in the audience earlier said that we should have a regular report from City College and from the Balboa Station CAC. So that's all.
And you've stolen a little bit of the thunder for the end of the meeting, because Linda's actually going to make a short presentation.
I know this.
And she's here, yeah, which is great. And what we talked about is that standard item on the agenda is for her to make a report back, so that we've got ongoing good communication, which is going to be so critical. Yeah, good. So I guess Howard.
Thank you, Howard Chung, representing the Ocean Avenue businesses. Emily, I appreciated your comments, kind of the macro level view of how we got here, what we've done for almost a year, if not more a year. I mean, it's important to note that we've been sitting here through many, many meetings, hearing a lot of staff opinions and proposals on environmental, on design, on open space. So we've covered a lot of areas, and all of that has been put into the set of parameters that we voted on and that we agreed upon. And I appreciate Mike's concerns, because you were here for some of the meetings, but not all the meetings, so you weren't here for all of that. And I mean, from our perspective, it's kind of like being with Lisa going into being part of the evaluation committee, but we're not a part of that. We trust Lisa, and we believe she'll do her a great job in it. But it's kind of like being an alternate juror, where you're sitting through the entire trial, but when the jury needs to deliberate, they can't deliberate because they're the alternate juror. We have to trust the process. I trust personally Lisa and her ability to make sure that the parameters that we work so hard on are instilled in both the RFQ and the RFP process. I guess my comment is, to the extent that there are items that weren't covered by the parameters, and I can't imagine what those are, given the comprehensive process that we all went through. But if there is something new, or there is something that is not covered by the parameters, then perhaps that's an area that Lisa and you would come back to the CAC and say, hey, look, this is a new issue, hasn't been covered, let's talk about this, let's have a meeting. I know there's not a lot of time on that, but at the same time, I don't want to relitigate things that we've already covered. We've covered it, and we voted on it, and I think we have to move forward on this. So those are my thoughts.
I just wanted to repeat, this is not because of a lack of trust in you at all, Lisa. I think I said last time, it's because I wouldn't want to be in your position to try to have to make a decision as to what is best for the entire group, what is the sentiment of the entire group. I know I haven't been here, Howard, for a year, but I'm pretty well informed by the prior member and others as to what's going on. And I think you are too, Lisa. You've said that you're getting the feeling, but I have a little bit better feeling now that you told me that A, you can talk to people one-on-one without violation of the act, because I don't understand, you know me, Howard, I'm not that type of lawyer. I don't know anything about the Brown Act. I couldn't even remember the name when I was here last time, but I'm starting to understand a little bit more about that. So A, you can talk to us one-on-one, and I know you would, and B, it seems like we're going to have a pretty big part in the RFP and the RFQ process. You're going to come back to us on a monthly basis and say, here's what I've done, here's the reason I made these, and did I make the right decision? So that's what I posited last time. I wouldn't want to be in your position, I said. I don't know how you'd make these decisions, but it's not because I don't trust you. I certainly do. It's the fact that I want to have input for all of us, for our interests, and you know the interests that we recited.
Yeah.
So let's open it to public comment for this. You want me to finish? You want to finish the last piece?
Either way, the two lines is one item, so however you want to do it.
Yeah, okay, you know what? Looking at body language to kind of get a sense. Do people have a lot of comments to what we just covered, the first two sections? Raise your hand if you're going to want to make a comment. One, okay.
I just want to know if we're going to get a copy. It's going to be
yes.
On the website.
Yes, copies. Going to be online. Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and take a note if you need to remember. So give me 1 second because I need two hands. So the first comment was about posting materials further in advance so that people would have time to review them, particularly for those of us who have to go back and engage with our constituent groups and have meetings. So the city team typically needs 3 weeks to prepare and internally vet the materials. So we think we can do this 2 week in advance. We're going to aim for a 2 week goal, 2 weeks in advance goal as we move forward. And just knowing that there's a lot of internal stuff that the city team has to do to make things happen. So continue reminding people of the project's history and context. Bring back the pre-meeting presentation. So we'll bring back that first 15-minute meeting. At the very end, we stopped doing it because we looked around the room and it was the usual suspects. We were all here and we'd all heard it. But we will do that, especially as we move into the next phase. And probably we'll use that time as well with anything that we think makes sense to preview in advance to help making sure that there's a level playing field. The next one is, we just talked about this a little bit, about holding joint meetings with City College, Board of Trustees, and the Balboa Park Station Area Plan, CAC. So we just talked a little bit about this, about making sure that we the CAC, as well as you participants, to come to their meetings as well as we're going to also defer to Trustee Davila to ask for her guidance since she is a City College representative. And then we should have joint meetings as we were just talking about when it makes sense. And then if there are specific things that you think that could help us to have better collaboration as participants in this process, please let us know because we're open to figuring out better ways to be able to work together. And you know, if it's something that can be online or it's something that could be a less formal meeting, or whatever it might be. So not all the questions get answered. So this is a tough one because the staff has worked hard to answer all the questions that have applied to the scope of the project. And frankly, what you just heard were the questions that people felt didn't get answered. And we felt like I want to make sure that everybody heard the answers to the questions because I want to be able to go to the next stage of the process saying we've clearly talked about all the open issues. There also are written responses to a lot of the questions that are in those matrices that you've got to dig through and you'll have to look for. And we responded to them again. They responded again to them tonight. And then we'll continue to respond to the questions as they come up. Because if you have questions, the questions means you're not on board with something, you don't understand something. That doesn't help us as we try to move forward together collectively. And then meetings should not run longer than the allotted time frame. So well noted. Meetings have not run longer than 15 to 30 minutes over. And when they have run over, it's because we've had 30 people in line to make a comment, and I erred on the side of making sure that everyone could speak. We had a couple of meetings where we had simultaneous translation. People were speaking in another language, and we had an interpreter. Again, that's what often causes the meetings to go longer, and I erred on the side of making sure we had full participation versus being much more kind of, you know, tied up, buttoned up about we must end at this time. But so noted, and we'll make sure that we are careful when we design the agendas to make sure we're being realistic around. If it's going to be a hot topic that we think we're going to have a lot of people at, we'll probably have one less item on the agenda so that we can allow that agenda, to that topic, to get the time that it deserves. And people making public comments should announce whether they're from an organization. I completely agree with this. One of our recent members, who I didn't realize who she was, is in this month's San Francisco Magazine as the new version of Housing of the Future. I'm like, oh, I get her comments a little clearer now. I understand better. So I think really if you are a neighborhood person, you know, and if you're not a neighborhood person, that's fine. Just tell us, because we just, and again, it's about having a level of transparency. And then that you know, we can't force you to say it, but we can ask you in the good spirit of being transparent to be able to say where you're from. And frankly, it's more, it helps us to be better. We can make better, we can understand you better if you understand your perspective, where you're coming from. So the CAC should have fewer mayoral appointees. That's not up for consideration. It's written into the legislation of what the Board of Supervisors put forward as the policy. It is what it is. And people living in adjacent neighborhoods should have more of a voice. And again, the CAC seats were determined by the Board of Supervisors. Supervisor Yee worked very hard to create them as many as possible to be from the neighborhood, because we are most greatly impacted, and that was also a negotiation with the mayor to make sure it's for this neighborhood and for all of the city. And we can't change them. And the format rules are too rigid. So I don't really love this format either, but this is the way that it works in how you've seen me stumble many times, like, oh, we need another public comment here. It's just the way that public meetings happen. So, and then just to let you know that we're thinking about alternative formats for the next phase, because we're going to be looking to your participation in a really active way. And one of the things I just want to forewarn you now, so when you come back to the next meeting, you'll see this, is the next meeting, we're not going to be in a theater style, like a classroom. We're actually going to have, the front of the room is going to be probably facing this way, with chairs more in kind of like a semicircle, so people can see one another, and we can be engaged in a more kind of a engaging communication way. As somebody who facilitates for a living, this is like my worst, I hate this format. Because, you know, someone's talking, you can't see who's talking. You hear just the voice, and fortunately we have the words, so you can see the words. But again, the idea to make it, and we'll have the screen still to the side, but the idea being is that when we use the screen, we'll look to the left on it, but we'll be kind of more in a kind of collective community. And so do more informational presentations by experts, so that we will, we're going to do these as they are related to the various topics that we're going to consider. I think the other thing on this one is to make sure that we're doing a good job of making sure if there's more than, because I heard this several times, if there's more than one way to think about building playgrounds, that we don't only hear from one playground expert, that we would hear from different voices, because there's been a sense that that it's been driven by one voice, and so we'll make sure to do as good a job as we can if there's more than one way to think about something. So, and then the last piece, this is for everybody, including myself, to know more about the Brown Act. There are three beautiful URLs that you can go to, and if you have insomnia, it probably would be helpful. But I guess really being clear, as well as the Sunshine Ordinance, so that we're, that was not nice that I said that, sorry, would be disrespectful to us. But I think what Mike said earlier about this notion of like making sure that we're doing things, that there's nothing, so that we're all on the up and up, I think is really, really important. And I think that's it. Oh, no. So, sorry. How could I forget? So the CAC should facilitate greater participation by more groups, including all of these folks. So this is the thing I think we heard loud and clear from the feedback last time, and our ability to really communicate, particularly with people that are monolingual, non-English speakers, as well as people that can't be here at 6:30 at night. It precludes a lot of families from coming, as well as people that don't have access to internet, right? That they don't even, it's harder for them to participate. And so we're gonna actually, we'll begin to talk about it in the February meeting, and we'll continue with it on the April meeting, is we're gonna have conversations around how do we actually create more dialogue with more people? And do we need to do a Saturday morning meeting? And how do we think about doing this in a way to make sure that we're engaging as many people as possible? And then, as I alluded to earlier, there's gonna be a lot more opportunity for the giving feedback once we are gonna go into the request for proposal, where we're gonna have a really robust process. This makes the planning the team nervous over here, but I envision like having, being able to fill the gymnasium at City College with people that wanna come and hear the presentations and be able to provide their feedback. Because our ability to really understand what this project is going to be down the road, we've got to get more people on board now. I'm looking at Rita. Rita, we've had many a conversation about this, that once it's built and traffic is bad and da-da-da, everyone's going to say, how did this happen? So we need to make sure that we're getting people involved now and being really being able to be responsive. And then if committee members aren't able to access the reports online, I think what we just need to do is we need to be able to get people to write down their address, and we can mail them a copy of the report. Or maybe we can do something that somebody can be the buddy to somebody who's not on the internet, so that you could download it, print a copy of it. Again, it's gonna fall on all of us as a collective community to make sure that we've got good representation of everybody.
And I think that is the end now. So that's my response as the chair to your feedback about how to make the meetings more effective as we move forward. So with that, I'll turn to my colleagues if they want to add anything else. Robert, I'm gonna leave my Oprah stance.
When I hear comments saying not all the questions were answered, it bothers me. And I think we have a responsibility. If you have a question and you direct it to staff, sometimes the staff doesn't understand your question, and sometimes we don't understand staff's response. So I think we have a responsibility to just be patient and stick with it. I mean, a lot of this is highly technical, and we're lay people. We're just, giving up our Monday night football to be here. So I think it's important that, we really try to have genuine communication. And, if you have a senior moment, you glossed over that portion of that discussion, backtrack, because it is important. I would like to set as a goal that we don't have this in the future where not all the questions were answered. There's two parts of the responsibility: staff to listen carefully, and we as a community to listen carefully to make sure that that connection has happened. Because if it's not happening, it's a waste of time. That's it. I'm going to get off my pulpit.
Any other feedback? Okay. So now let's go to public comment. So now this. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to do public comment just in, I think we should just do this in general, overall public comment. So if you want to respond to the document, or you've got, the break, we need to take the break. Are you okay? Okay. So if you've got either public comment that you want to provide feedback to what we've just gone through, or if a question still is not clear, and to raise it, and or just general comment that you want to provide.
General public comment has to be its own item.
Oh, it does. Pardon me. I was trying to be... See? There you go. One more time where I'm not good at the standard process. So, all right. So if you've got feedback on the presentations that we've just talked about, the matrices with the three, with the questions and the feedback, now's the time to respond to those. And then regular general comment will follow. I'm sorry I confused everybody. Okay, so we just had the presentation with the blue and the green, the questions. If you have any feedback to those questions, now is the time to do that general comment first.
Okay.
you can put it in the thing if you want.
Okay, I'm Theodore from Excelsior, and I was wondering, what is it meant by transportation demand management not covering circulation? Because, like, when I'm thinking of circulation, I'm, like, biking along ocean, and at the intersection of ocean and Geneva, that's not my favorite to bike because of all the cars turning onto Geneva. So I'm thinking that will discourage people from biking if they have to deal with that more often.
Let's get through the questions.
Let's do all the questions and then they can respond, okay? Any other?
Hi.
Dave Tejeda from Sunnyside. There's a meeting tomorrow night, is that what I heard? What's the details on that?
Tomorrow night is the Balboa Park Station Citizens Advisory Committee. And the agenda for tomorrow will be to hear an update from the Mayor's Office of Housing on the proposed affordable housing that's being proposed for the Upper Yard, and also to hear a presentation from MTA with regard to traffic safety at Geneva and San Jose, as well as a requirement that part of the study of the Geneva and San Jose include the relocation of the M Line terminus to another possible location in the area. And those are the two major items on the agenda tomorrow. The comments I made earlier were more about the work here has to be tied into the work there because they impact each other. So the agenda tomorrow is not necessarily talking about this. It's talking about business more immediate to the Balboa Park Station. But in the future, the hope is that there will be more linkage between the work between the two committees.
That's the committee that meets over at, or is that, it's meeting here?
Yes.
And that is open to the public?
Oh, yes. It's the same thing. Although it's staffed by MTA as opposed to this esteemed panel here.
So many same people that we see here. Yes, okay. But it's here. Same time frame?
Yeah, they meet at 6 o'clock, 7:30.
And it's the second Tuesday of the month?
Yes.
What was that?
Oh, is it 4th?
Usually the 4th.
Yeah, usually the 4th, but tomorrow is a special meeting, I guess, because of
the
holiday schedule.
Can you repeat that? Remind everybody again. She's going to type in when the meetings are.
Okay, ordinarily, the meeting is the 4th Tuesday of the month. Tomorrow's meeting is a special meeting. They're moving away from their regularly scheduled meeting because of the holiday, the Christmas holiday, towards the end of the month.
But it's here?
Yes, in this room.
Thank you.
And I'll see you because I'll be here too.
I just have Paul Gore, Westwood Park. Just one thing responding to what you said, Robert, about unanswered questions. I think it's probably too late now, but going forward, with CACs, the questions ought to go to the CAC and then address to someone. Because sometimes I address questions, not to the CAC, but to the city. And I had to nag, and I still did not get adequate answers. So it would have been great if I could have done the question to the CAC directly, and then the CAC farm up the question, and then the CAC will know whether we get an answer to it.
That's not a grand idea. That's a great idea. That's what we're here for.
Great.
Anything else on the presentation's feedback? Okay, so let's go to general comment.
I'm happy to talk more about this if this doesn't answer your question fully, but the short answer of the question was why and how doesn't TDM, transportation demand management, include circulation, for example, how bikes get through the intersection over here, which I admit is harrowing. Yeah, so I think it's a natural fit. Of course, like anything would encourage, anything related to safety in that intersection would affect your decision or not to ride through there. But I think the standard like technical way that, or policies that are used to, quote, manage demand are usually associated with a development or a land use. And that's the mechanism for implementing it, and that's why transportation management is kind of limited. So it could be something like bike parking or showers at your place of work, things like that that are associated with a development or a land use. Whereas things in the middle of the road or in the streetscape, well, there is a lot of overlap, I admit, are not typically part of a TDM kind of strategy. But that being said, anytime a new development or a campus or some kind of land use goes through TDM planning, usually these things come up, right? And so in an environmental review, for example, it might be required to mitigate some kind of impact, and that mitigation might be related to bike safety or circulation in the street. So it will come up. It's not just because the TDM doesn't focus on circulation doesn't mean circulation is being ignored. I hope that clarifies a little. It's really confusing, especially when we're not looking at precise strategy, like we're not looking at the meat of the thing, which I hope we can get to in February. But does that sort of help? It's just kind of a funky way of the way that the planning process and kind of city staff work around things.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so now we'll go to general comment.
Can I put in the last?
Sure, go ahead.
So Harry Bernstein, I'm still not, from what I understood about TDM, it's still a little vague about which areas are covered. I believe there was something in the original documentation saying, should it deal with any trips not originating within the reservoir, which means local traffic. And the direction, I believe, from the staff was, no, it should not. I think it's those things that the people living in this area and people at the college want to have accommodated. And I may be confused about that, but I think it needs to be in there somewhere. See, other things, I don't know what it will take to get City College engaged, but there were references to the various plans, the committees, there's a lot of stuff talking about demolishing 7 buildings, about not having parking lots. I know Jeremy told me how City College is going to manage when there's no parking over there in the lower lot. I'd like to know that too. There's a lot of issues. And AJ, the local resident, brought up the question how to deliver the Balboa Park Station area plan's objective, which I guess you know about. Develop the West Basin of the reservoir for the greatest benefit of the city as a whole, as well as the surrounding neighborhoods. But there's been no discussion about what that means, and yet they're going ahead with this RFQ. Without that.
So now we're going to move back to... Harry wanted to respond to the last section. I'm just going to close down the comments to the presentations and now open it to general comments. Welcome.
Hello. I think this has to do with both, so I chose general. Okay. My name is Julia Raskin. I'm with the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. First of all, thank you to everyone on the CAC for your service. You know, these meetings can be really long, and I really appreciate you sitting and listening so well. So also thank you for passing the parameters that really encourage, specifically the transportation parameters that encourage alternative modes of transportation aside from cars, specifically walking and biking. And with that, I think better access to the transit that exists, specifically Balboa Park, would be, you know, really important to making that possible. So, as I think many people know, Ocean Avenue is not the most fun place to walk or bike, and it's actually a high injury corridor, so many people have been hit and injured and even killed on Ocean Avenue. So it's a huge concern for us. We really hope that this project can interface with other projects like the Facilities Master Plan and also use ideas from the plan of the Ocean Ocean Avenue Corridor Design Study that was made by the Planning Department, and use information that comes out of the TDM to create a safe east-west path between campus and the Balboa Park station so that people feel safe walking and biking in between. So I'm looking forward to exploring how that looks, how we can leverage all these really great opportunities that are happening at the same time, and improve access to BART and make Ocean Avenue safer walking and biking. Thank you.
Any other comments? General comments? No? Okay, so come on back.
Okay.
I thought in the last meeting.
Oh, no.
I thought last week we were going to talk about changing the preamble for the parameters. Last meeting we talked about that was going to be looked at.
No, I think we talked about that. I've changed that. The preamble is also a part of the preamble.
The report, the annual.
With the report, yeah.
Right, and we haven't talked about that always. I mean,
I don't think we were talking about changing the preamble. We were talking about changing the report.
The annual report. Okay, either one. I put this on the email, but it's not up there, so I'll give you guys a copy. It's just two suggestions.
Sure.
One is that in the creation of the BRCAC, that my understanding, and this is from talking to different people, is that Norman Yee was pushed, quote, motivated to create the BRCAC because the neighbors were freaking out. It was going so fast, and the direction it was going, that was the motivation for the BRCAC. I feel that that should be on record. And then the other thing is that there was that big online survey, and that should be on the record of the annual report too, because that was citywide, and this is public land, so that online survey of the whole city, the results of that survey should be on that annual report, because that's just part of this whole thing.
Go ahead.
What survey are you citing?
The citywide, city-sponsored online survey by SurveyMonkey that you guys did.
Is this prior to the CAC?
Yeah.
Prior to the CAC.
Well, I think it was like right at the beginning
when
we
were doing
work. So, but I mean, that's part of this whole thing.
Right. What you're also suggesting, too, is that there was a lead-up that got us to the CAC.
Right.
So being able to acknowledge. I think that we can certainly add it as part of a preamble to the preamble to the report, because we're supposed to report on the progress of the CAC is the mandate. So this is stuff that happened before we were created. So that's, but we'll figure out a way to provide that context. Any other comments?
Harry Bernstein, thank you again. Maybe this is ahead of us, since you have only an RFQ, not an RFP. It still seems to me that there is were you the one who spoke about that it would be too costly if there were 100% of so-called affordable housing, and that's one of the reasons there has to be a market rate component of that. So what you end up is having a majority of unaffordable housing as a basis for privatizing publicly owned land. And that is still a concern. I'm not sure if there is going to be the minority, a report of minority views in this report to the supervisor. Is that what will be circulated for further discussion and comment next month?
Yes, and it's not my intention to make a lot of changes to it, because my goal is to have it be well reflective of the collective. That's why it's taking me longer to do, is to make sure that it's well reflective of everyone. I will say, though, that based upon what we heard tonight, and I asked this with our meeting with Supervisor Yee, is that I actually want us to get somebody from the city's attorney's office to give the advice directly back to us to say why this property needs to be 50% for how we are able to make sure we are true to this, to ratepayers by the way that the property is being divided up. Because it's actually two things that are happening. One is to ensure that the 50% allows you to have the middle income housing that would there would be no money to pay for that. That's what that 50% of market rate allows us to have. And then we have the affordable housing affordable component. So it's a combination of the two that are coming together that are allowing the land to be used in this way. But I have asked that we get the like legal ruling from the city attorney's office to once and for all be very clear so everyone understands that the PUC that it satisfies the PUC requirement and it satisfies whatever and the PUC requirement is really is where it's legislated. But I feel like this is going to continue to come up over and over again, and the challenge is because we're brokering two different things together to make this happen on this property is what's making it complicated. Because it doesn't fall solidly in one category. It's that the 50% of market rate housing is allowing the extra money, so to speak, from the market rate is going to subsidize the cost of the middle class housing because there's no funding for middle class housing. And the low income housing will be offset by the regular pots of money that are available for that. So I think this
is... Sorry, can you say about the low-income housing?
The low-income housing, there are funds available to be able to afford that. The middle-class housing is the housing which it's impossible to fund for. So the market rate housing is allowing us to fund the middle-class housing. So the project is meeting two different needs. One, to make sure that it's maintaining the requirement that we get market rate value for the land, as ratepayers, they're obligated to do that with the land, that they being the PUC, and at the same time being able to meet the housing needs. That the only way to do any kind of middle class housing is to have the market rate housing. That's how I understand it. Is it's two pieces coming together, and it's not one or the other. It's both, and I think that's where it gets complex.
Got it.
Did I get it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's and I think that's where the struggle is with it because it doesn't follow only one specific rule. It's fulfilling two different rules. We're doing two things with the property. So we'll get something that's the legal opinion back on it so that it's very, very clear so there's no question about it. But we talked about this with Supervisor Yee and the staff last week to say that we really want to make sure that, you know, what we're doing is on, you know, is legal to do and is the right, it is the appropriate thing for us to be doing with the land. It's the basic premise that the whole project is sitting on. So.
And I would like the report also to have the probably minority opinion that there be no housing built. That is still a wide community preference and option. I know that's not really covered anymore. But it should be stated and maybe explained what the basis of that request is.
Kate Pavetti, Elizabeth Park resident and also a member of the Street Life and Business Committees for the OAA.
I'm sorry, what's that?
Let's see, and also committee member, Street Life and Business Committees, Ocean Avenue Association. This question may be very premature. However, I thought as you were describing, again, reminding the breakdown for housing, is whether or not with the transition of the administration in the national level, how and will that affect us, and do we have any contingency plans? I don't expect an answer, but I just thought it's something that we need to be prepared for, especially as you were talking about that.
Thank you.
Now we're going to be working that out.
Yeah. There would be no answer to that question.
Corey Smith of the San Francisco Housing Action Coalition. Lisa, to elaborate a little bit on what you were talking about with the government being able to subsidize low income and not middle income. It's all based on how federal tax subsidies work. So the HUD determines, and they set income caps for how much they're willing to subsidize out with tax credits.
Sorry, can you slow down?
Sorry about that. The HUD sets caps and determines what they'll be willing to subsidize housing at, and once it crosses over a certain limit,
100% affordable developers will not be able to get any tax subsidies from the federal government, and that's why we can't subsidize middle-income housing the same way. And then a little bit on Kate's comment, I know we are talking with members of the affordable housing community, and there's a lot of concern. We've basically seen that the federal government is getting out of subsidizing housing. The state government has gone from, I think it was $1.3 billion in 2010 to zero. So in terms of trying to produce the amount of subsidized housing that we need, it is really, really on us to get creative, and we're trying to figure out, working with a coalition of community housing organizations, trying to figure out something we can do to solve the problem, because it is a really big deal. I'm happy to answer any of the federal tax subsidy questions if anybody's interested. Thank you. And you all rock. And Patriot, or do you have the game DVR'd?
Yes, don't say.
Okay. I know better.
Any other public comment? Okay, so now let's go to Linda. Thank you, Linda De Silva. We've been waiting for you. You've been here. You've been waiting for us to be ready for you.
Happy to hear all the comments, actually. And I'm Linda De Silva. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities at City College of San Francisco, with a little bit of a cold, so forget my horsiness. I'm being asked to just debrief and update on where we are with City College's facilities master plan. So City College is required to have a facilities master plan, required by education, state education code, required by the City of San Francisco, required by City College board policy. And our facilities master plan is driven by the educational master plan. So what we want to do, obviously, is plan and develop and operate and maintain facilities that support the educational plan. Our last facilities master plan was created in 2004, and it lasted from 2004 to 2014. Obviously, the facilities that are outcome of that plan last longer than 10 years, but the plan is meant to endure for 10 years. And it's expired, and so we're developing another 10-year plan to guide the next 10 years of facilities development here at City College. And City College is not just this ocean campus, which is the main comprehensive campus of City College, but we have also 10 other facilities throughout the city. And the plan does cover all of that. The City College engaged an architectural master planning consultant after a solicitation process and reviewing a multitude of proposals. They selected and commissioned an architectural firm named TVP to provide technical advice and guidance. Also, the Board of Trustees appointed the Facilities Committee, which is a standing committee of the participatory structure of the college, which is made up of students and faculty, staff, and administration, to basically provide guidance and walk step by step through an 18-month process with the facilities master planning consultant in this effort. The facilities master plan is taking 18 months because it's very comprehensive, and it's got three main phases. A needs assessment, in which the enrollment projection, the actual condition of our existing facilities, and the projected facilities needs to support the projected enrollment, the deterioration over time of our existing conditions, and the educational and academic programs and curriculum that we expect to teach over the next 10 years and beyond is taken into consideration. Once all of that needs assessment is done, and that was completed over the spring and summer of 2016. In the late summer and throughout this fall semester that we're in right now, we've been developing options to address and solve those needs. A number of different options, with many community meetings and input, college community as well as the external community. And we've landed now on what looks like a draft preferred option. So that's where we're at right now, is a draft preferred option. With that draft preferred option, we'll then next semester, and I'm a typical academician, we talk in terms of semesters, right? But the next semester is January through June 2017, and we'll be developing actually the details of that preferred option. You know, how large would the new buildings be? Which buildings would get demolished? Where do we need parking, and how much? And all of the space between the buildings, which is actually what makes a campus very, very special. Our focus, in terms of the pretty diagrams that if you're following along, you've seen pretty diagrams for the Ocean Campus, more so than for our 10 centers at other locations, there are guiding themes and needs of additional student development space, and additional collaboration and collegiate space at our other centers. However, our educational master plan doesn't quite go into enough detail at this time in terms of academic focus, more so than we already have in the educational master plan and in our existing facilities, for us to draw pretty diagrams. Whereas here at the Ocean Campus, that there is enough of an academic driver in the academic master plan, so we actually have the pretty diagrams. By the way, engagement and transparency is a big driving principle and what we're trying to achieve with this facilities master plan. So we have a website, it's ccsf.edu/FMP, FMP for facilities master plan, and it's very robust. ccsf.edu/FMP, facilities master plan. And all of the material that's been developed, presented, all the notes, all the sign-in sheets from all of the people who have come to all of the different sessions that we've had, it's all there. It's a lot to take in, but it's organized pretty sensibly. And I do encourage you to take a look and maybe look at the more recent stuff. There's been so much community input, so many meetings, a lot of surveys early on in the needs and assessment process. So we do have a website that's very robust. We've had a lot of community meetings. I'm now at the point of even wanting more, just as Lisa, you were talking about taking a look at this CAC and, you know, do you need to have more daytime meetings or Saturday meetings? We're taking a look at how do we get even more engagement than what we've had. And so I've been doing a traveling roadshow and giving written updates whenever possible, etc. So we really want more than less transparency and input. I've also heard, why are we doing the TDM so late? Why is the RFQ for this development out so early? And I actually think that the timing is very synergistic right now, that there's a lot of leveraging happening with the CCSF master plan. I think the timing is fortuitous, actually. There's a lot of collaboration with city planning, with the Office of Economic and Workforce Development, with ART, with MTA, with Public Utilities Commission, and with City College. A lot of collaboration and discussion, in fact. If you look at our draft preferred option right now, what's kind of internal to the campus where the buildings are is pretty landed. Everyone's feeling pretty good about the neighborhoods we've created, the arts neighborhood, the STEM neighborhood, the athletic neighborhood, the student support neighborhoods. Where we feel that we would want a little bit more detail right now is what we're doing with PUC, with MUNI, with BART, with city planning, with OEWD. We're spending the next month in some very focused technical charrettes to talk about the interfaces on Ocean Avenue and on Phelan Avenue and how exactly our gateways will align with pedestrian crosswalks, with bus stops, etc. So that's some of the detail that I feel like the timing is actually perfect, and I feel very appreciative of the collaboration that's been happening and that will continue to happen in this next 30 days. So that's the status of where we're at. I didn't bring any pretty pictures, which is sort of outside of my comfort zone to just be here talking. I feel a little bit naked. But the pictures are up on our website. We were actually scheduled in November to give an update presentation to our Board of Trustees. It was a long November meeting, so we got bumped, which means we're doing it this Thursday evening in this room. So,
this is the place
to
hang
out. Yeah, so like, if tonight wasn't enough for you, you want to come back tomorrow night for the BP Balboa Park Station. I'm actually giving a presentation there, and then I'll be back Thursday night at the board meeting. So a lot of, outreach and transparency on the master plan and where we're at, just again, in an effort to get as much input as possible. So following that and following the next 2 months of the technical shredding to talk about those city street and city college ocean campus interfaces, we will land on a preferred option. And our consultants will take the next 4 or so months to develop all the detail behind it. We will continue to have public meetings and community workshops during that period, and we always advertise it on our website. And our website includes a comment link, so if you can't come or you can't wait until the next opportunity for an in-person public comment, we receive comments all the time and we collect them all, every single last one. And then also you can sign up for a mailing list if you want to be pushed notifications about the different opportunities to come and engage. Once our governing board approves the facilities master plan, it will be the roadmap for our physical development of our facilities. We will undergo a CEQA compliant environmental impact study, and we will seek financing. And I will hopefully be able to make a big impact transforming this campus and our centers to serve the students in the 21st century in the city of San Francisco. So that was really all I had, and I'm open to any questions.
Thank you. We approve. I appreciate
yeah,
that very
it's
much.
Great. It's so great to have you. Yeah.
Prior to the Board of Trustees approving the draft plan, will there be an opportunity for that presentation to be heard in this body? So you have some commentary from this group that's looking at the housing side of this development proposal that's kind of joined at the hip?
Yes, I am willing to come back and make any presentations to any group at any time. And our public sessions, where I have our architectural master planning consultant, they're open to the public, and we have those sessions in both the afternoons and in the evenings, so that we do cover people with different schedules, and we encourage you to come to those as well.
Linda, you talked about in the first phase of the needs assessment, you did work around the enrollment projections.
Right. Our enrollment projections are based on the enrollment projections given to us by the state chancellor's office. So City College is one of 72 districts, 112 community colleges in the state of California. And their enrollment projections for us over the next 10-year period assume that we're going to grow another 50% over where we are today, which is greater than the enrollment that we've experienced in the last 30 years.
So I just want to make sure we note that there's projections from that probably need to go into the team, that, right, to your point about having numbers be accurate.
Big time.
Big time. That's about your 35% number, right? Yeah,
what was that? What did you say?
So I said that earlier Robert talked about a 35% increase, and Linda's just talking about a 50% increase. So it's a big time increase, so we need to be.
That's right. Now that projection is district-wide at all of our 11 sites, so
on a ratio basis.
Can I ask her a question?
First, again, thank you, because I think your facilities plan is very important to this group. The meeting on Thursday night, is it going to have anything to do about the facilities plan?
It'll be a presentation. The agenda is up, and surprisingly, we're early on the agenda. Usually I'm relegated to the ODARC 30, but I think we're scheduled for 4:15 on Thursday. 4:15.
And it's open to the public?
Absolutely open to the public. It is, again, a presentation intended to bring the Board of Trustees up to speed, but they do receive public comment during items like that.
Assuming things go without too much of a hitch, when do you think you'll have a facilities plan that we can look at that's meaningful? And that's really a broad question. I mean, is there one now that we can look at that's meaningful?
I mean, yeah, I don't know if someone's driving who could pull up the pretty picture or if you've got time for it, but the draft preferred option right now, I want to say, is pretty landed. Now, it's not approved by the Board of Trustees yet. That'll come in probably the April-May timeframe. If you were to click on the right, on the third link down, Facilities Master Plan Development, and the presentation for Thursday night is right there. And it's a short one. It's 8 slides. Slide 7, I think, is the pretty picture. There you go. So again, the blue buildings are existing, repurposed. The yellow buildings are proposed new. And you also see in the space in between, well, the peach-colored buildings are existing. And the space in between shows a lot of pathways, gateways, quads, external hotspots, because what we understand is that teaching and learning occurs as much outside of the classroom as it does inside. And I would say, as I said earlier, where the buildings are shown, and again, those aren't actual buildings. The Facilities Master Plan is a 50,000 foot level plan, so those are not, we're not designing. We're suggesting an approximate location for a building, or a quad, or a hallway, or a parking structure. And what I think will be the difference between this image and what will be in about a month a preferred option, which we'll then build upon with details, will be the interface along Ocean Avenue to get our gateways aligned with where the city's agencies can put the crosswalks, the muni drop-off stations, the bicycle paths, the other transit-friendly elements.
The other what?
Transit-friendly elements. And also on Phelan Avenue, that's a lot of, you know, Phelan. Over the years, as the west side of the campus has developed, we've created both opportunity for growth and expansion, but also pedestrian vehicular conflicts. And we very much need to figure out where the crosswalks want to be and how to have bicycles and pedestrians and vehicles all live together nicely. The Phelan Avenue sandbox.
Do you have an estimate as to how many new parking spaces will be in this plan?
We're not there yet. That's part of the recommendations development phase. What we know is that currently at the Ocean campus we have approximately 3,000 parking spaces. About 1,000 of them are in the lower Balboa Reservoir. And we also, based on a parking demand study that we conducted in mid-August, we believe that the total number of parking spaces is adequate for our current enrollment. Our consultants are still projecting out what the, you know, if nothing else changed, if people continue to use their travel modes that they do right now, how many parking spaces do we anticipate we would need, and where would we put them? So that's all the work that will happen next semester for us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for coming. Let me turn this thing. Is this on? No.
there. I really appreciate the way you're changing the focus, the direction of this of the campus to face Ocean Avenue, because our need to move people from the lower reservoir down to the BART station requires an activation of this street to make it socially acceptable to walk, which is not what it is right now. So it's really nice to have this the buildings that actually face Ocean Avenue, a little bit of green space, and I would hope that the big retaining wall would be coming down as part of that.
We hope so too.
Yeah. So, and I also like that, well, I have problems with it, but the garage in the back there, the way the cars are going to have to access it, they're obviously not going to come through Marston Avenue, that's never going to happen, but they will, I guess, come down the 280, come off the new exit, and then make a sort of a U-turn through that parking lot and up to the parking garage behind the football field. And in one way, that's great because it keeps a lot of the traffic off of Phelan and Ocean that we have right now. But I'm a little worried about how it might affect the walkability on the north side of the Ocean Avenue sidewalk. So that's something that, and because it affects our connection between the lower reservoir and BART, it's really important that we keep that less like walking through a gutter and more like, you know, a dignified walk to transit. Also, that's my statement. And as a question, I was wondering, you're still kind of fuzzy about how much parking you're gonna ask for. But I'm wondering, have you considered the TDM methods of reducing car use? To do your part to try and lower the amount of traffic in the area.
Yes, actually one of the, thank you for your comments. We too believe that that southeast corner where the majority of vehicles would enter to come to the eastern parking structure is gonna be a critical planning aspect, and that's one of our areas of focus in these upcoming 2 months of technical charrettes with BART, with MTA, and also with Caltrans, because they're actually reorienting their southbound off-ramp to Ocean Avenue. And I hope that our campus is so beautiful and so park-like that residents from Sunnyside and from Westwood Park walk not only on Ocean Avenue, but through our campus to get to the other areas around the campus and to BART. One of our focus meetings with the city team is coming, actually next week, is specifically to discuss the TDM. So City College has a sustainability plan, has had one in place for a while, and TDM is part of that, and it's time to update the plan. And that falls under my facilities committee's purview. It's definitely beyond just a bricks and mortar facilities thing, because it's a lot of policy and philosophy, et cetera. But TDM absolutely is a part of how we're gonna make this happen and be a sustainable college and institution in the city of California. See, the cold is just right in my head right now. In the city of San Francisco. In a traffic survey that we did earlier in the spring, part of our needs assessment phase, we learned that about 40% of our students take our single occupant vehicle drivers, which is not bad. For community college, that's not bad at all. We think we can do better. We are talking to our students right now about whether they'd like to create to model a discount transit pass after San Francisco State University's Gator Pass. And we already have a staff transit discount program as one of the staff employee benefits. But we're looking at other ways that we can improve all of that and get people out of their cars.
I read on that same survey that 50% of those 40% drive
are willing to think about another method of getting to school if they thought that there was something available that they could use.
Right, and if some of the other methods weren't so treacherous.
Yeah. Is it also, since they're reconfiguring the entrance from the, right now we have an on-ramp onto Ocean Avenue, as though Ocean Avenue was a freeway, but there's going to be a right angle entrance from the freeway. Is it possible while they're doing that construction that they could, I guess there's a difference in grade, but is there a way to have an exit right into the parking structure from the freeway without backing up the freeway all the way to San Francisco?
Yeah, this pretty picture does look really pretty. It's in two dimensions and it doesn't show, I want to say, about a 20-foot grade differential. But those are some of the questions we're going to be asking of Caltrans at these upcoming meetings.
So Linda, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's great to have you, and I think having you giving us regular updates is going to be great, as well as times for us to come together and share data, work together, and so on. So excited to have you in your role.
Thank you for having me. And similarly, I bring back a report of the Balboa Reservoir development back to my facilities committee, who then reports up to the City College governance structure. So I'm serving two roles here.
And if you'd like any of us to come to your meetings, we'd be happy to.
So just in terms of next steps, we're going to take January off. We're going to not have a meeting in January. And then our next meeting will be in February. And the focus of that meeting will be the draft report of the TDM, as well as finalizing the board report. And ideally, we'd like to be able to begin, but this gets into the question about packing a meeting with enough, you know, how much do we want to have in any one meeting. There has been a request that we could hear from the various constituents that we represent to be able to make sure that we understood. Westwood Park did a great job showing their map and sharing a lot about the historic nature of their neighborhood, the neighborhood character. And I think Sunnyside would like to do the same. We'd love to hear from the Ocean Avenue Merchants Association to understand what's going on there. Christine, I want to talk to you about how do we actually think about galvanizing more about what's happening with our schools, and just again as a way for us to be able to educate, and John, also some of the work that you do with the Pedestrian Safety Committee, just again that we use the meetings as a way to continue to educate ourselves around what's happening, because there is so much overlap among and between our different efforts. So with that, happy holidays, and take good care, and we'll see you in February of 2017, and look for things online.
Is it the second?
It's the second Tuesday.